Hey guys, welcome to episode 142 of the JV Club with my guest Rebecca Watson. I am delighted to be back in the saddle. Guys, you know I record this while riding a horse. I had to take those 2 weeks off. In all honesty, actually, I only took 1 week off, and then I had another episode recorded with a guest last week, and the file got corrupted. What a huge bummer. So knowing that I was going to have to take 2 weeks off, but having thought that I was going to be only 1 week short was very upsetting, everyone. But I'm working through it, and I want to thank you for hanging in. I'm sure it affected your lives, not at all. But anyway, I'm glad to be back. I think the world of Rebecca, I'm so glad she was able to do the podcast. And just want to throw a few shout outs out there because, of course, I'm behind. So I'm so behind that I can't even acknowledge anything other than pretty much just emails I've gotten. But I wanted to do that. So I wanted to thank Colleen and Mike. I want to thank Hillary and Richard. I want to thank April and Andrew, Lauren and Ellie. I want to thank Jenny for her new MASH category idea, Annie, Tammy for making me aware of a dress that looks an awful lot like a cootie catcher, a series of stitched together cootie catchers. Caitlin, I want to thank you, and Jose. Matt, I want to thank you, and Mari, all the way in the Philippines, I want to thank you. Thank you guys so much for your emails. The only other thing I was going to say, which is a little bit, that was me just needing to take a pause to swallow. I'm not sure why I have like extra saliva in my mouth right now. And I welcome anybody who's never listened to the podcast before to a typical Janet introduction. Listen, we have a Pinterest account, and by we, I mean the two amazing women who have been creating that and running that for me. The JV Club Pinterest account is one of my favorite things, but is also a thing that takes a little bit of time to put together, and they have valiantly tried with their very busy schedules to create visual images that basically back up the podcast episodes. And I think it's a really, really great visual representation of the podcast. I don't talk about it that often, but it is something that I love as a sort of way of recording visually what the episodes are about. And I think they really, their schedules have gotten so crazy that their volunteerism has fallen behind, and they feel terrible about it, and they need not feel terrible about it. But if anybody is active on Pinterest and interested in taking over, I'm sure that would be very, very much appreciated, not just by me, but by them. And we can have a conversation about that. So if that's something that you want to check out, it's the JV Club on Pinterest. You can see what we're talking about. And if you'd like to get involved, just send me an email at janet@janetvarney.com, and we'll talk about, you know, sort of what's involved. Okay, that's it, guys. I want to get into the episode without further ado. And I hope everybody's doing great, and I'll talk to you soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Starting from the beginning, everybody. Yes. Starting from the beginning. I want to welcome you to summer.
Yeah.
Is what it feels like right now in Los Angeles, California.
I'm okay with this.
You are?
Actually,
okay.
Yeah.
But you live in the Bay Area.
I do now. Yeah. I was living in Buffalo, New York for far too long.
I gotcha.
And I just moved to San Francisco back in October. And so I'm experiencing for the first time no winter.
Yeah.
And it's magical.
It is pretty great,
it's
isn't
magical.
It?
So I'm really okay with 80 degrees
right. Yeah,
in
that makes
February.
Sense. I mean, that's fair. I'm real cranky about it, but
really?
These guys know. I'm just such a, like, even in San Francisco, just being up there for the last month, I was very grumpy. It wasn't colder and more foggy. I don't need torrential rain. I don't need snow.
You want
seasons,
though. I
don't need black ice.
You want something a little different.
It's not even that.
Really?
Becca, I would be okay with 24/7 fog, I think.
Really?
I mean, I wouldn't be. But San Francisco weather, the inconsistency of the weather year-round is my favorite weather.
Yeah.
Where, like, one day it's hot and sunny, but then the next day it's, like, chilly, cold,
foggy. Just like to be kept on your toes.
I like to be kept on my toes.
Yeah.
And I prefer cooler, foggier weather in general. I'm from Arizona, so I had flip-flop of what you had.
I see.
Which is just endless, hot, cloudless days.
Right. Too much beauty.
I like a little. Listen, now you listen.
No,
to
it's
me.
Like it's
the
like pennies from heaven.
Unrelenting. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Especially when you're in Arizona and everyone's like skin cancer, skin cancer, skin cancer. Not that right. you can't get it elsewhere, of course.
There's that saying, if you feast every day, when do you feast? You know?
Exactly.
Every time it rains pennies from heaven.
Exactly.
I'm so full
of bone mo, of other
useless.
People's bone mo.
Yeah. Yeah.
I look forward to this podcast episode even more than I was before knowing that information. It's funny that you would say that too, because I've gone back to my eat extremely boringly and responsibly 6 days a week, and then go crazy on the seventh. And tomorrow's my cheat day.
Oh, God's are you excited?
Day. You know, I know you believe in God. Yeah. The Lord's Day is my cheat day, and it is amazing how much I appreciate. Like when I'm just kind of eating whatever I want, whenever. I'm not really thinking about it.
Right. You're just shoving it in your face.
I'm shoving it in my face.
You don't think how great it is.
When you stop having like delicious, fatty, carby, wonderful things, and you can only do it once a week, it really gives you something to look forward to.
So what's the plan?
The taste different.
Are you, do you have it in mind? Are you picturing
like
a pizza?
Pizza. That's everyone.
Yeah, of course.
First go-to.
Pizza's
the best. It is delicious. It has all the things that I feel like I don't really let myself have the rest of the week. So for sure that, but you also got to budget your appetite, because I could sit and consume probably a large pizza just based on like how much my body has hungered for carbohydrates and fats and dairy. But I want to make sure I leave room for sweets.
Yes.
So, and I don't really do like an all day crazy, because then I just feel like garbage by the end. So it's sort of like, you know, you eat normally and then for dinner, it's like, well, what the fuck am I going to do?
You know, when I was a kid, my grandmother told me that you had two stomachs. You had the dinner stomach and the dessert stomach.
Genius.
And so you can get really full with your dinner stomach, but then, you know, your
dessert stomach will kick
in.
Yeah,
you're ready.
God, I wish that were true.
And the thing is, I went home and I told my parents this, you know, after I'd finished my dinner.
Uh-huh.
No, I'm full. Okay, I'll take some cake. And my dad's like, no. If you're still hungry, you eat the rest of your dinner. And so I explained to him the two stomach theory.
Uh-huh. And the scientific principle of two stomachs.
Yeah. And he looked at me for a long time and then said, where did you get that? And I said, I just know it. I just know. He's like, did your grandmother tell you that? And I said, maybe. Why? And he said, because I told your grandmother that when I was a kid.
Oh my God. It got recycled, spit back out.
Yeah. Grandma was just trying to get one over on my dad.
Oh my God. That is so funny.
Yeah.
You were a pawn.
Yeah.
A pawn in their game.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like, I mean, I appreciate him coming up with that wonderful lie as a child. That's very creative
it
and
is.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But also, had that not been true, that is like grandparent logic 101.
It is.
I feel like the rules get bent by grandparents, and that is a perfect thing for a grandparent to say.
Yeah. And I was my grandmother's favorite of everyone, so I was spoiled rotten by her. So
all
the
of your cousins
thing,
listen to this, so I should
well,
let you know.
They,
you're
my
unabashed.
Brothers know, my cousins know. Yeah. It was no
Why
secret.
Why were you the favorite, do you think?
I was cuter than everyone else.
Okay.
Number one.
Where do you fall in age with your grandmother's other grandkids?
I'm the youngest of everybody.
Oh, the baby.
Youngest of my brothers. Mm-hmm. All my cousins are 20 years older than me, mostly.
Okay. So she really had...
So, you know...
I'm not taking anything away from how cute or wonderful you
are. I was super cute, is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a huge reader, and I liked puzzles, and I liked nothing more than going to my grandma's house and, like, playing with her dog and watching 2020. We would watch 2020 together.
Sure.
You know, staying up late.
I love the memories of what shows people watch with their grandparents. I wish I talked about that more with people, because I feel like I always watch Star Trek with my grandfather.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. But like, I wasn't a Trekkie, nor was he. I think he had like a vague, slight bemused interest in it.
Yeah.
You know? And well, I think maybe he was watching it for me and I was watching it for him. Now that I'm thinking about this right now,
I think he was sweet, actually.
I better put on Star Trek for the kid, you know? And I was like, I guess we're going to watch this weird thing.
It's like an O. Henry novel.
Yeah. And in a way, weird way, it's also somehow applies to like the logic making it back, like the snake eating its tail of your... Your dad and grandmother's logic of stomachs.
Yeah, we used to watch like whatever was on, because it was always like Friday night, you know, and so it was like terrible sitcoms. I'm thinking like just the 10 of us? Was that a
that seems likely
show?
Sure.
I feel like that
it
was a show
was.
That we
for
watched.
Sure there was a show.
Just a terrible show that nobody else really remembers. And then, yeah, 20. I do distinctly remember 2020.
What if your grandmother would only watch shows with numbers in them?
Oh, my God. You just blew my mind.
60 Minutes, 2020. Yeah. Just the 10 of us, 8 just is enough.
Yeah.
That's it. We would not
in fact,
be allowed
I might
to
be confusing just the 10 of us with 8 is enough. Yeah. Maybe we watched both, though. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't. They're probably like a decade apart. I feel like 8 is enough reruns were on when I was a kid.
Possibly.
That probably I would watch.
Yeah.
And just the 10 of us feels like I was too old to watch it.
Oh, okay,
so I don't
maybe.
Know where we fall in this age.
Would be,
but.
Yeah. I was born in 80. So this would be
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I might have been watching.
This
just
would
the
be
10
like 86,
us,
87.
Yeah, you probably
maybe.
Were watching just the 10 of us, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I've never seen it.
Okay.
I can only assume
bother.
There are 11 people in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of whom
easily
they just
11.
Ignore all the time.
Right.
And it's a just, show about alienation
yeah.
of one person
yeah,
in a family.
It's just in the attic all
that's
the
right.
time.
That's right.
But he's never
attic
shown.
Kid.
They occasionally reference him.
Sure.
But
sure.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Has anybody seen Billy? No. No.
Attic. Okay.
Move
yeah,
on.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you were the favorite and the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Where was this?
This was in South Jersey.
Okay.
The deep woods of South
Ooh,
Jersey.
Deep woods.
Yeah, a lot of people who aren't from New Jersey think of it as Sopranos sort of
yeah.
thing. But North Jersey is very different from South Jersey. South Jersey is still the Garden State. So
sure.
I grew up in the woods.
Oh, that's
on,
great.
Like surrounded by farmland. We had a creek. It's a creek when you live on it.
Don't say creek.
Yeah,
I
no.
should not say creek. Okay.
Other creeks are creeks, but that creek is a creek.
Okay, I got gotcha. You. So, I mean, I think I got gotcha. You.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Feels very southern to me to say creek. No?
It is.
I feel like my grandfather, who was southern,
yeah.
would say creek.
There's a lot of southern influence in South Jersey.
Isn't that
it's
interesting?
Like it's weird. It's somehow south of the Mason-Dixon.
Yeah.
In intellectually, at least. I have a lot of racists in my family.
Great. Glad you got that
racists.
Covered, too.
Yeah. A lot of awkward conversations with aunts and uncles, you know.
Yeah.
Like no, you don't say Orientals anymore. You mean those damn
bless.
Asians
yeah, that's
are taking
right.
our jobs.
Yeah, I know you're not going to change your mind.
Right.
Could you just use different
language? Just use the right
language?
Word.
Yeah.
It's going to go a long way. Baby
yeah.
steps, you know. But they're besides the occasional racist, you know, good people, good upbringing.
Was that's an interesting, I don't know where I'm going with this other than to say, because the people that I've had on the podcast who have lived in close proximity to Manhattan, I'm always interested in the varying levels of awareness that they had of such a bustling metropolitan, because I didn't really have that. You know, Tucson, yeah. Arizona is just like neither here nor there, and it's not that close to anything like sensational.
Right.
But people who lived, you know, like I think June... Rayfield was, she lived on Long Island. She would go into the city all the time and really had a sort of like, yes, my life is very separate from that, but I have easy access to it. Is that
yeah.
true of South Jersey? Because based on what you
no.
described, it sounds so country. Yeah.
We were isolated. We were 3 hours or so from New York.
Yeah.
And Philly was our closest.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Like, yeah. 40
kind
minutes.
Of terrible geographical understanding of
no,
the
it's,
East Coast.
Yeah.
Everything's
it's
all
weird...
mushed together in a cool way,
right.
but I don't ever.
Yeah. It's a weird place. Like, I have a theory of statehood that we should make Puerto Rico a state and then split New Jersey. North Jersey gloms onto New York
uh-huh.
and South Jersey gloms onto Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Everybody would be happier with this.
Yeah.
Like nobody has any Jersey pride.
Interesting.
You know? We don't have any sports teams really.
Right,
you know,
right.
like, yeah, the Giants play in North
yeah.
Jersey, but
it's so
the
much
New
of it
York
feels
Giants.
Like it's a suburb of
yeah.
a city that exists
yeah.
in a different state.
Yeah,
that's an interesting.
So,
that's a really interesting idea.
And then you don't have to change the flag.
There you go.
Still 50 stars.
I like that you're still looking out for the
you know,
manufacturers of the flag.
I'm all about you know good graphic design, and
sure.
I feel like we nailed it.
We
with
did
the 50 stars. I've seen some promising 51 star designs, but
I mean, I'm sure Texas would happily secede if you wanted to just.
There is that too.
Yeah,
yeah. There are a lot of options here, but I feel like the splitting up of New Jersey is the best personally.
Let me ask you this
yeah.
because this we'll do the other side of the country. How do you feel about the whole sort of, I mean, this isn't a thing, but the Northern versus Southern California idea that people constantly, especially
yeah.
on the North side, are like, listen, if we were our own state, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Right. It's one of those, the San Francisco, LA thing. I've noticed this in many cities I've lived in. There's this underdog thing where people in one city think a lot about how much they hate people in the other city, but the people in the other city don't really care.
Yeah.
So San Franciscans seem to really hate LA
yeah.
and everyone who lives here.
Yeah.
I've seen the same thing with Boston and New York.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People in Boston but hate people in New York.
Is that true of Philly too? It feels like there are a lot of spoken out large cities near New York that yeah. could all kind of point
I would
the finger
say
at New
it's
York.
Not as bad as the Boston New York rivalry.
Uh-huh.
And I'm using air quotes because again, it is
very
one-sided.
Right. You know?
But it is there with Philly too.
By the way, totally there with Tucson and Phoenix.
Yeah.
And I'm from Tucson. So
there
it's
you
like
go.
Everyone in Tucson hates Phoenicians hates Phoenix. And hates Phoenix. And Phoenix is like, oh,
yeah.
We think of you as a cute little city
nice.
Down there.
Yeah. Seattle and Portland, same deal.
Oh, interesting.
I know
God,
some Portlanders
that I didn't
who hate
know,
Seattle.
That I thought was they were far enough apart that it was just like
no. It's actually very similar
together.
To the East Coast. It's about a 3-hour drive.
Interesting.
You know, that's what you need. I think.
Plus, I love both those cities, so I'm like,
yeah.
you guys.
Yeah, you're
come
both
on,
cute.
You're adorable.
Yeah, with your flannels.
Yeah,
your coffee. And
I love we could be talking
TV
about
shows.
That between now and 1990
right.
and it would still be
still
totally
the same.
Accurate.
Yeah, I lived in Seattle for a couple of years like in the early 2000s and that was still going strong.
No, sure. Early 2000s, you bet.
Yeah.
you were definitely still
in
it.
The middle of it.
Well,
yeah.
What took you to Seattle?
Boy.
Oh,
that's where I go. That's what
stories.
Takes me pretty much
the
everywhere.
Best and worst.
I'm a great feminist.
Perfect.
I just
perfect.
Move someplace because there's a boy I like.
But is let me ask you this. Is there a sense of like are you aware of that when it's happening or are you also feeling like, you know, my life here feels like it could use some forward momentum and this is a reason and an opportunity to do that rather than like, I don't want to go, but I'll go for you. Like,
oh,
there's
yeah.
a big difference.
It's
you know
definitely
I mean?
The former. Definitely yeah. the former. It's a lot like the way I got out of rural New Jersey was college.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to college in Boston because that's where I want to be. And that's an excuse to go there. So, yeah, it's the same thing. I was done with Boston and I knew a guy in Seattle and he was my high school sweetheart, actually. It would have made a great story if we had stayed together.
Right.
I went to visit him and... then I didn't have anywhere to be. So I was just like, I'm just going to stay here.
Yeah.
So I stayed there for like three and a half
else,
years.
If you don't mind my asking, because you brought it up, what other touch points can you list that are
with
like
boys?
With boys and the migration?
So I left the guy in Seattle and needed to get away from him. So I went back to Boston. So in a way, that was another move
still
that was prompted
forward,
by
yeah.
a guy. and then when I was living in Boston, I met a guy who lived in London. And we ended up getting hitched in Vegas.
Perfect.
Just decided to, let's get married. Why not? And now I live in London. And I got to London and I realized I hate London and I okay. kind of hate you. So,
oh, perfect.
Yeah, so that wasn't going so well. And then I met a guy who lived in Buffalo, New York. And we really hit it off. So I'm like, I'm going to leave my husband for you. So I moved to Buffalo, New York. And at this point, everyone in the audience is thinking, you're an idiot. What a dumb. Wow. That must have exploded in your face. It did not. That was 5 years ago.
Oh, nice.
We're still together.
Great.
And he quit his job in Buffalo and we were both working from home. And so we had no reason to stay in Buffalo, at which point you should leave Buffalo immediately.
Sure. Fair. So, all due respect to those Buffalonians.
Yeah, Buffalonians. I think that's what they with. So then we just were like, well, where do we want to be? And he didn't want to see another flake of snow in his life.
Mm.
And we both had a bunch of friends in San Francisco. So now we're in San Francisco.
And you're liking it.
Love it.
I love it so much.
I love it. We live on a beach and there are palm trees and it's sunny and warm every day.
Where are the palms? No, you don't have to tell me where you live. But that's a mystery right there, what you just described. But I will say this too, is when you were describing your love for being with your grandmother, I had this experience when I was so like morose, but when I was driving home from San Francisco earlier this week, I was on the phone with a girlfriend of mine. It's a 6-hour drive. So it is an opportunity for me to be like, I should probably call this person I love and never talk to.
Yeah.
And, nice. And I called her and I was talking to her and she was like, you know, okay, so you're heading down. How was everything? Like, you know, are you excited to be home? And I totally, unexpectedly started weeping and was like, yes, but I feel extremely sad to leave, which I typically don't feel great about leaving San Francisco, and didn't feel great about it when I left for reals, you know, 10 years ago. But I was having such a childish emotional reaction to it. And she was like, "What's wrong?" And the only thing I could say was, "I don't know if you ever felt this when you were a kid, but this is how I would feel when I would have to leave my grandma's house."
Yeah.
Like this just,
I totally get that.
Sadness.
Yeah, I absolutely
get
that.
Of like, I'm leaving a person and an experience and an environment that is feels better to me in some ways than whatever my regular life is. And probably it is partially because it's not your everyday. And when I was in San Francisco, I don't know if I had the same relationship to it.
But right.
Yeah. Did you have that? Were you attached to your grandma in that way?
Oh, I was so attached to my grandma. You don't even know. My parents would dread coming to pick me up because it would just be tears. And then I would be miserable for the next day. And I would be sleep deprived because, you know, we'd stay up watching 2020.
Right.
And then I'd be up at 6 a.m. to watch, what was the... Captain Noah, I believe.
His name was. Never heard of.
Terrible, you know, creepy in retrospect. Uh-huh. Guy who dresses up like
was it a local
Noah.
Show?
I don't know. Maybe like a local Philly sort of thing. And yeah.
Like Noah's Ark Noah?
Yeah, yeah.
Captain
with
Noah.
Like weird Christian sort of bent to it, but I don't know.
Was
your
grandmother Christian?
Yeah, my whole family is, but not like, you know, they're Baptist, but not the kind that you can't dance. You know.
Right, and they not Footloose.
Not Footloose type, yeah.
Did they have a strong reaction to you breaking away from all that?
My mom cried. I didn't really want to talk about it with her, with any of them, because we don't normally talk about religion anyway. But I was at college, and I was dating a guy, and my mom asked me if he was Christian out of nowhere. I'm like... I don't know. I don't think so.
And then it's like, wait, are we going to do this right
now?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, are you? And I was like, I don't know. No, sorry. No. And she started crying and she said, but who made all of this? And I'm like, do we really need to talk about evolution now? And I was like, you know, mom, I'm sorry, but it's just the way I feel. And she was genuinely upset. And I was upset too, because that's an upsetting thing to think like, oh, you know, I can't be with my daughter forever because she's going to go to hell, you know. But I reassured her, because when I was a kid, I was at youth group. I was really into God for a while.
Oh, you were? That's interesting. And by the way, if this is something you're tired of talking about and I just don't know it, then feel free to. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I was talking to my youth pastor, and he was talking about how, you know, when you accept God into your heart, he writes your name in a book. And
Santa Claus.
It is very like that. And when you go to heaven, like they look in the book and oh, there's your name, you get in. And I remember distinctly asking him, like, well, what if I do something horrible later in life? And he's like, no, it doesn't matter. Once your name's in the book, you're in. I was like, what if I like say God's a jerk and I'm just done with him? And he's like, doesn't matter, your name's in the book.
Wow.
So you know what? I got the best of both worlds.
Yeah,
I get
you
to
did.
Believe what I want now.
Oh, see, you're the opposite of me. You're very lucky, because I have, these guys know, and listen, they still find me. I'll get to this. I mean, you'll know what I mean in a second. They still fully find me. Like, they somehow have my email address now. I still get like an occasional email that's like, we want to welcome you to feel free to still come to the Hollywood ward. But I have the opposite, which is that I have committed the worst, short of probably killing someone, which is to have supposedly accepted the Mormon faith and then and then said, I don't believe it, is like, I wish it were the opposite. I wish it was, I wish I were getting the best of both worlds.
Yeah. And the Mormons are tough. I when I lived in Seattle, there are a lot of ex-Mormons in Seattle, and they just never got left alone. They would track them down.
They want to save us.
And
you know, I've done the worst. For me to have had the truth in my hands, for me to have agreed to
and
be baptized, which, by the way, no 8-year old is like, I've thought about this all night and I've decided I believe, you know, nothing. But to feel like you've had it and then to turn your back on it is like the worst of
the
worst.
That's the worst you can do. Yeah. Yeah. And again, like, I get it. You know, I get it. Like, if you're talking about forever, you're talking about someone's eternal soul.
Yeah.
And if you really believe that, then
of course
you should do everything you
can.
You know, you should. But at the same time, I'm just so thankful for all of my religious friends and family who just don't bring it up.
Yeah.
You know, on the one hand, it's a catch 22. On the one hand, I want them to care about me so much that they never shut up about it.
Right.
But on the other hand, I just want them to shut up.
Right. Right. You know? Which they did.
Which they do.
But do you think that your mom really, and so you reassured your mom by saying the thing about being in the book, but is that, was that, do you think that that satisfied her? Like, because I think it's interesting when people are, their faith is tested in that very specific way. And the way families work through that stuff is so fascinating to me, because some families that you would think like, well, that they're going to assume that person's going to hell because they're very religious, end up being like, you know what? All of that being true, my faith in God is such that I know my kid's great and I'm going to be with them in heaven versus someone else who you might think would be more flexible. And for some reason, that's a thing they can't get past. And they honestly believe like my child will burn in hell for all eternity.
Yeah, it really tests exactly what you believe. And I think it throws the whole idea of organized religion into the air, you know, for people like my parents who, you know, it's just a thing you do. You go to church every Sunday, and
community.
That's what we did as a kid, you know. But then as we kids got older, it became just going on holidays, and now it's like, well, maybe we'll do Christmas Eve, maybe not.
Right.
And so when I bring up this weirdo belief that once that your name is literally being written down in a book, and once it's in there, it's in there. Even as a metaphor, it's like, but do you actually believe that? Or did somebody just make that up to feel better?
Right.
You know, and, do you actually believe that, you know, because I don't believe in God now, I'm going to burn in hell for eternity. Or does it turn out that, oh, what you actually believe is in something a bit fairer, maybe in the thing that you want to believe in. So I don't know. I think I'm kind of rambling here, but I think that with my parents, at least, it's been not a lot of serious philosophical thought into it. I think it's just been years of getting accustomed to the idea that I'm an atheist and that that's okay and that things are going to be okay.
Right.
I think that's really what most people's religion is in the long run, is that things are going to be all right.
No, I think that's a really distilled way of thinking of it. And I hope that's true. And I want that to be true, because it feels like, you know, as a person, and I, you know, I sort of, everybody who listens to the podcast regularly knows that I'm very interested in faith, and I'm interested in where it comes from and why some people have it and some people don't, all this. And I've been I don't want to say antagonistic, but I have been as defensive about religious people as I have about atheists, because I don't like bully atheists either.
Yeah. No, I hate,
you know what I mean?
Atheists.
But I'm interested in, I'm interested in you because you've made I don't want to say a career. It's not that, but you've made public statements about it in a way that also ties into sort of feminism and just sort of how we move through the world as people, as, you know, believers in science, all that kind of stuff.
I used to do a lot of atheist conferences and stuff, and I very quickly got tired of those conferences, because a lot of the talks are just people getting up on stage and talking about how, hey everybody, there's no God. Okay,
right,
aren't we smart? And so immediately I'm like, okay, but then what? So I pretty quickly just started talking about things that were related to the fact that, okay, so everybody here thinks that this is the only life we've got. So why don't we just talk about how we can make that life better for everybody, you know? And that's how I became more of a humanist. And that's the whole idea of humanism is accepting, like, this is all we get. Let's talk about making humans better and helping each other as humans.
Sure.
That to me is way more interesting than just trying to convince religious people that they're wrong. You know, I'd rather, you know, not just shit on, can I curse?
Yeah, for sure.
I'd rather just not shit on everybody who happens to believe in some galactic force.
Right. Well, don't you think some of that, I mean, that's, some of that stuff has to come from personal experience that borders on rage, if not fear. I mean, I think, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't have, only when I feel threatened in some way by it do I find myself like going on a diatribe about certain religions or, you know, right, whatever. And the rest of the time I'm like, well, what you just described sounds as Christian as any Christian lifestyle in this life anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, the idea shouldn't be, and a good Christian, and I count Mormons as this, I don't believe that Mormons in any way, well, I don't believe that Mormons are acting in a loving, kind way towards humankind here because they're worried about being punished. I honestly think that like a good Mormon has a good heart and is like, I it's my responsibility to be a good person here, not yeah, because I fear something.
Yeah.
You know,
in Buffalo, we had a lot of Mormons come by, you know, doing the thing where they have to go live somewhere in a
missionary.
Right. Yeah. And
adorable. No, I love it. I love it. Love so, everything about it.
So, yeah, we would get these mostly really young kids, mostly girls, who are living in rat trap apartments.
Girls, interesting, because that's pretty unusual.
Really?
Yeah, it's mostly boys.
Yeah, I've, I mean, I only saw, I saw four of them, two sets of two. Mm-hmm. And then I think before I moved there, my boyfriend knew another pair. And because my boyfriend at the time worked for Center for Inquiry, which is like a secular, skeptical organization. Mm-hmm. And he and his friend, Debbie, who also worked there, still works there, would befriend the Mormon missionaries that would come to their door and, you know, invite them in and invite them to parties and stuff. And
listen, that's an interesting, I would pay money to see a good standoff, a friendly standoff,
yeah, and that's the thing,
between,
like,
you know, yeah, a really educated skeptic who is enthusiastic about also hearing why someone else believes what they do.
Yeah.
And these, you know, cute 19-year-old yeah, Mormon boys who are really steeped in that theology,
right,
in a very intense way at that time in their lives. Like, they've been given the directive that that is the only
right,
real thing they should be focusing on.
And the great thing is that it wasn't just, you know, just debating, like sitting down and debating. It would be sitting down and talking about how they're doing and where they're living and what they're
sure,
what they want to do with yeah, their lives after they finish the missionary
work. How scary
work,
and lonely and to sort of yeah, be knocking on doors when you're yeah, when everyone else is like getting drunk in a dorm.
Right. And also talking about something that you believed fervently in, but then I think as soon as you leave the nest and get exposed to all of these different ideas, you start believing less and less, or like just little bits of doubt creep
good,
in.
Yeah.
And that's really difficult. I used when I lived in Seattle, I was a canvasser for a nonprofit called Washington Citizen Action. So I was going door to door asking for money, and I was terrible at it. Just the worst.
Yeah.
They only kept me on because they liked me. But I was never met my goals, you
yeah,
know, and the reason why, you know, I had this friend also named Rebecca who was the best one there. And she would come in with, you know, thousands of dollars at the end of a couple of hours. And I would have like $50 because she believed 100% in what we were doing. And yeah, no matter what anybody said to her, her answer was absolutely, yes, we will be doing this and that and the other thing. And this money's going to help me. Somebody would be like, well, would I get better bang for my buck by giving you this check or by donating it to this other thing? And I'd be like, honestly, maybe the other
yeah,
thing is better. Like, we're going to hire lobbyists and that's important, but maybe there's a better way to go about it. And
well, it
know,
almost sounds like, I mean, it feels like being skeptical or sort of accepting yourself as a skeptic makes it hard to really not, because my version of that is that I am so empathetic. Yeah. And I have so much flexibility with that kind of thing that I fear that someone could reason me into just about anything. Cause I'd be like, you seem to really, I'm really picking up this vibe that you're super sure about this. I don't feel that true about anything. Sure. You're right.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
but I wonder if, you know, there is that sort of like, if the mind, do you feel, and I also want to go back to the idea of you as a youth being a God person. Do you feel a sense of, Have there been times in your life where you felt a sense of envy, as I have and have expressed on this podcast, about people who just have a thing they're sure of? Because I don't cling to that much in that way.
I absolutely get that these days. When I do feel a little tinge of jealousy of my younger self. And my mom showed me like a little diary I had when I was a kid. And it was one of those fill in the blanks sort of things. And it's like, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to do this. This is what I want in a husband, like weirdo things like that. And I had listed like, well, I don't really care so long as he loves God and, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. And I was just really single minded in that respect. And I remember, you know, I would go to snow camp with my youth group and where all we do is just like pray. And I would listen to like DC talk and, you know, Christian rock. And I was really into it for a little while. And I am, you know, there is a little bit of weirdness about like there's something nice, you're right, about having that sureness, that surety in your life. But on the other hand, I think back and I'm like, God, I was dumb. You know, I was missing a lot of stuff. Yeah, you know,
when did that sort of start devolving for you, or at least disintegrating in that?
It was really as soon as I left home for college. So
even in high school, you still were.
Yeah, yeah.
So what were you, aside from loving God? So that would be like, if I said, what kind of music were you into when you were 16 years old, you would tell me that you were into Christian rock or?
No. Okay. I guess I was out of it by 16. I was into that stuff, I would say like 13, 14. And then I fell in love with REM. And so for my 16th birthday, my parents got me tickets to see REM, and it was like my first big concert. So I guess I was back into the secular world by 16.
But not to the degree where like,
I wasn't
you still
an
going
atheist.
To church and, yeah.
Yeah. We didn't really, that was the point where we were going to church like on holidays. And I still definitely considered myself a Christian. But I was going to parties and I was drinking and smoking and, you know, things like that. I wasn't like a little angel.
Gotcha.
But yeah, it wasn't until I left home, went to college, and immediately I was just sitting there in my dorm room at night thinking, and I was like, oh, that's just all bullshit. I was thinking about, philosophy. I was taking a philosophy class,
that's
8 a.m.
Isn't that a great college story, though?
Yeah, it's so stereotypical.
But you know what? I've said this, and I will say it again. I am comfortable with what makes me special now, to the point where I am happy to embrace all of the things that make me the most cliched human. Like, I don't need to worry. I used to think you know what I mean? Like, when you're younger, you're like, oh God, please let me be special. Like, you want to, I mean, maybe not everyone's like this, but I do think I wanted to feel separated in some way. And part of that was the narcissism of feeling like you're broken in a different way.
Right.
And the good news is that once you embrace all of that and you're like, oh, I'm a human person.
Right.
I'm not that special. You know, then you're like, okay, yeah. So So I went through my college years where I had that experience and like, but isn't that kind of great? You know, it's like,
and
that's,
you know,
great.
And the fact that so many people do experience that has made me a big proponent of teaching things like comparative religion.
Sure.
As young as high school, you know, or younger. I think everybody needs to be exposed to as many different ideas as young as possible. And that's why, to bring it back to those Mormons, that's why I love that they send kids out. I think it's eventually going to destroy the Mormon faith. But
I don't know, it's hard to say because of those numbers.
I mean,
it's like the amount
of
kids
back.
You lose
right.
versus the amount of conversions that happen in countries where Mormonism feels like a great American
ideal. That's true,
because there's something very bureaucratic and American about it.
Yeah,
and so if you're giving that sprinkle of American money / I mean, it's weird, it's like, I think it does in some ways a thing that is the opposite of what maybe the intention is, but
I think like the kids they send to other industrialized nations, you know, or within the U.S. are generally going to be, I think it's a good thing, you know, they're being exposed to more people, but at the same time they have them live in these apartments all together where they and they, you know, they're not allowed to drink, and you know, so it cuts into a lot of their social time. And I think mostly they're just getting doors slammed in their faces. But I hope that other people are talking to them and realizing, like, these are kids who haven't experienced the world and maybe still aren't, even though they're traveling. And so, I don't know, I try to encourage other people to, like, just talk to them, be nice to them.
Yeah.
We do the same thing with Jehovah's Witnesses. My boyfriend, Adam, he loves talking to these people. And so Jehovah's Witnesses would come by, and there was this guy who my boyfriend was just working on. And, like, they would get into some serious, like, deep conversations. And the guy was really sweet. He had a son who was really into science. And the guy was conflicted because he didn't know, like, he wanted to help his son pursue the things that he wanted to do. And and he also found it really interesting, the things his son was learning. But then he's like, well, I don't know, though, if he's going too far and you know, needs to just read these books.
It does. There's a real rigidity.
Yeah. And my
Jehovah's Witnesses.
My boyfriend was a physics major. And so he had all these books. And so the guy was like, you know, I want you to read this Jehovah's Witness book. And my boyfriend's like, I'll read that if you read this, you know, Carl Sagan book or something. And the guy's like, okay. And so they go their separate ways, and the guy comes back, and he's got, like, they're always in couples, you know, and he's got a new woman with him. And we realized, like, every time he came back, he had a different person with
him.
Because they were all failing.
Oh no.
And eventually, we got the knock on the door, and the guy was just gone, and he was not allowed to visit my boyfriend anymore. But yeah, so, like, I you know, I think it's good to talk to people like that, because they're just not, when they're just getting doors slammed in their face all the time, it's just reinforcing this idea that they have some special knowledge that the world's not ready for.
Well, I think that's an interesting point. Yeah. I don't, and to be fair, I really don't know much about Jehovah's Witnesses. I really don't. I mean, I had, you know, I went to school with a couple of kids. It's like, speaking of cliches, like, okay, so we couldn't participate in any holiday activities.
Right. They were always,
honestly, they would have pretty to go to the much library. All I remember.
Yeah, they would have to go to the library whenever we had
very
parties.
Limited understanding of what that means. And I've never been visited by any. So I really don't know what I'm talking about.
I can't imagine they can get up into these hills very easily.
Probably not. It's a deterrent, but even like in places where, you know, I know the missionaries make their way, it's kind of tough. So you believed, you were a believer when you were a teen, very easy to picture you loving REM. I approve and respect that. What kind of student were you? What was your high school like?
Well, I was straight A's until high school. And then I realized that I could do a lot less work and get B's. And that was fine. So I'm a good test taker and a bad homework doer. Mm. So, yeah, I would get B's and some C's here and there. But I was in all the advanced classes and the AP classes that they were starting to offer. And I got good SAT scores and stuff like that. So that's what enabled me to get into the college I wanted. But yeah, I was more focused on having a good time and enjoying myself. And so, like, I a lot of my friends, because, you know, I'm a bit nerdy and I have a lot of nerd friends. And a lot of them think back on their high school years with bitterness and would just absolutely never go back.
Right.
And I always feel left out of those conversations because I actually had a pretty good time in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had good friends and went to the occasional parties, but I didn't overdo it, you know? And yeah, I liked high school.
What was the boy situation like then?
Oh, I was asexual.
Oh,
I was completely asexual. That was another conversation I felt left out of in high school.
Interesting.
I would have these girlfriends and we'd stay up all night talking about boys, but I was faking my way through it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Like, did you question, like, did
my sexuality?
There's so much I want to ask about this. Number one, I want to ask when you hit puberty and if that had anything to do with it. or if you hit it and like you were getting your period and all that kind of stuff, but for some reason like the hormones weren't kicking in that way. The next question I want to ask, you can answer all or none of these in any order you want. The next question I want to ask is, did you have crushes on people that weren't in your actual peer group? Was there, what did you salivate over, you know, a movie star or something? Mm-hmm. Three is, did you ever wonder if you were gay? That's it. Those are the main three.
Those are good questions. Okay. I'll take them in order. I never really thought about my sexuality. And so I hit puberty, I guess, what was that, seventh grade? I'm trying to think of when.
I don't even know when I did. But I guess I just mean you would probably know if you were behind everybody.
Yeah, no, I think
way.
I was on schedule. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of like which class was I in when I got my period and bled through my jeans? Ugh. And like that one girl noticed, but she ended up being really nice about it. I was just like, I think you should go to the school nurse. And I was like, oh, okay. And I just was unprepared. And so, yeah, I think that was seventh grade. And I don't know. I had like a boyfriend in seventh grade, Brian Lukowski.
Shout out to Brian.
Hey, Brian. He was cute. He was new to school. But it was just because like, that's the thing we do now.
In junior high for me, it was like, are you going with someone? And that meant maybe you held hands.
Right.
With the occasional,
we
maybe
never
you would
even
smooch.
Kissed. He I was know, constantly asking it. Me to kiss him. And I'm just like, no, let's play Transformers. Like,
no, I totally get it. And by the way, just to make this about me, because ultimately that's my number one goal.
Absolutely.
Is just to forget everything you said and talk about myself. No, but I just realized, I'm just having this aha moment too, where I realized that I went way further than I probably was ready to when I was in sixth grade with my then boyfriend. And then all the boyfriends I had after that, I like barely even smooched. Mm-hmm. And I did the same thing when I lost my virginity. I lost my virginity to someone, and then it took me like another year, maybe more, to do it again. And I just having that, I knew I've said that before about my virginity, but I don't know if I've put it together that I did that twice. Where I went
smooching.
Too far, not too, you know, it's not like I knew that I was going too far, but I think it's interesting when looking back to go, oh, I did this thing, but then like I had like this sort of on track with most other people after that.
So you backed it up.
I think it gets harder and harder to back it up as you get older and your experience grows. But
absolutely.
But okay. So
I was generally
you had your
on
boyfriend
track
that was like,
then,
this is what we do, but it's not like,
I did. I just wasn't that into it. Yeah. And then by high school, everybody's dating and, you know, having sex and stuff. And I just really didn't give a shit. I would sometimes get like little flutters of like, oh, like, does that boy like me? But then it was really just immediately dismissed.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, but I'm not that into that. You know, I don't even want to deal with it. So, all through high school, I never really, did I date anybody? I dated Matt. And again, like, did we even kiss? I don't even know. Mm. In high school.
Yeah.
You know, and we dated for like the summer or something. And then that was it. And then he's the one, he went to Seattle.
Oh, right.
And then I went to Boston. And he tracked me down years later. And then, I ended up moving in with him. But in high school.
Did you guys ever have that conversation? All due respect to Matt that you're now telling his story too. But did you ever have the conversation later on where you're like, hey, is it weird that like for the first, like when we were first going out, we like didn't do anything?
We talked about that a little bit. But he had a similar like weird background where he dated a lot of lesbians. That was the point where I was like, am I a lesbian?
Sure.
That's the point. Because I was like, this guy has dated nothing but lesbians and me.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a lesbian.
Yeah.
But then I realized that, oh no, I do like dick too.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Did you ever explore it in the sense that you're like, I guess I better smooch a girl to find out?
I've smooched some girls and I enjoyed it to bastardize Katy Perry.
I think you know what she's ripe for. It's really okay.
So I'm into that. I guess, you know, you could call me bisexual, but only in that really annoying way, in that I've been almost exclusively with men.
Right.
I went to lesbian speed dating with a friend once because she decided or realized didn't decide. That's so horrible to say. God, I'm gonna get letters.
She sat down with a pro and con list, pro list was longer.
Amazing. Sharing wardrobes, moving in after the first date.
Amazing.
Yeah. She was with a guy, and she realized, like, oh, I think I'm actually a lesbian. So, she wanted to go explore that, but she was a bit nervous. So I agreed to go to lesbian speed dating with her, and we got there late, actually. So lesbian speed dating had just finished, and it turns out that's when you want to get to speed dating.
Okay,
because that's everybody's... when you've got a bunch of people who are a little dissatisfied.
Yeah,
they didn't really match with anybody, and they're just gonna just roll the dice,
right?
Like,
right.
Here's a person at the bar,
right?
You know, so we get there, and she is the belle of the ball. Like, everybody loves her. She's cute, and you know, she dresses well, and she's just exploring her sexuality. So everybody's like, you know, she's prime, you know. And I was getting a similar amount of attention at first, mm-hmm. but it would be like, we would be in discussions, and it'd be like, so, you know, somehow it would come up like, are you a lesbian? And I'd be like,
fair.
Well, and they'd be like, bye. Yeah. And I'd be like, oh, but you know, I'm philosophically bisexual. And they'd be like, go away. Like,
understood.
We are not interested in your tourism.
Understood. And I'd be like, understood.
I get that.
Yeah.
So I just got rejected again and again and again, except for by this one severely drunk woman who was just hanging on me. And it was really sad. And then some friends of hers passed by, and she was like, hey, and they were like, hey, good job. You're giving her the thumbs up. And I was like, no, you need to take care of this. You need to put her in a cab and get her home.
No.
So it's just like a disaster. I finally tell my friend, like, look, I'm going to take, you seem like you're doing okay. She's like, yeah, yeah, bye. You know, so like, okay. So I go outside, hail a cab. This was when I was living in Boston. I lived like maybe a 15 minute drive away. So, and it's like 1 a.m. or so. I get in the cab, and I love cab drivers late at night. You know, I love talking to them.
I do too.
You know, yeah. And we were talking about Morocco. He was from Morocco, and we were having a really good conversation, and we pull up to my apartment building, and I was like, yeah, you can just pull over anywhere here. And he's like, oh, which building? And I was like, anywhere along here. He's like, is it this one? I'm like, yeah, that's the building, but you can just pull over wherever. And then instead of pulling off to the right, he pulls over into a parking space on the left, and he turns off the cab. And I was like, oh, so how much do I didn't see the, was that $20? And I go to hand him $20 through the window, and he grabs my arm, pulls me through the window, and tries to kiss me.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I was just like, throw the money at him and like jump out of the cab and run in and like go into my apartment and like, don't turn on the lights.
Sure,
because then
sure.
he'll know which window it is, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, God damn it. And so I just go to bed, and I wake up in the morning, and I'm like, I should be asexual again. The lesbians hate me.
Mm.
Dudes are horrible. I want to be back in high school.
I get it.
So, yeah.
How long did that last? Just the
my
day?
Asexuality, just the day.
Yeah.
And I got back to dudes, I guess. But
yeah,
dudes
That's
are the worst.
Scary.
It was scary. And it makes me like, I like the whole Uber thing that's happening now, but of course they, you know, had a rape and dealt with it like assholes, but I still feel better just like that. Oh, there's a record of where I went and who I was with, you know.
But you know, that exists too for the, I mean, maybe it was poorly managed earlier. I don't really know that much about how it was versus how it is now.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's better now.
With regular cabs, you mean?
Even with Uber and Lyft.
Oh,
like knowing,
yeah.
Like a record of who,
I mean, that was pretty recently though that girl got raped.
Yeah.
I think that was just like a couple months ago. But it does, yeah, it does still make me feel better. Like, you can see it on your phone.
Yeah, exactly. And, I guess that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's like, now I feel like when I get the receipt and it shows, like, this, somehow this was traced, but ultimately, if it's all after the fact, who knows what's really going on
middle. When I was in that cab, I wasn't taking a minute to, like, jot down his you know, license number.
Sure.
So, yeah, so it's nice to, like, have the information on my phone where I can be like, oh, John just tried to kiss me.
Right. Did you have the experience with him where you did have a oh God, I shouldn't have been so friendly with him.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that's so rough.
Yeah, right?
That's
absolutely.
Very complicated. And possibly he was not a bad dude. Like, it's hard to,
he was obviously like crossing way too many boundaries.
Of course. He's not a bad guy. I know. Like, listen to me. I'm excusing, but I struggle.
Yeah. I categorize him in the sort of a bad guy category.
Well, fuck that guy.
Because I think like part of being a good person.
Pulling you through the window is horrible. That's rapey. I apologize for being like, maybe he's all right.
That's what we do, though.
But if anything, to explore the line of like, that's the problem when you assume people are good.
Yeah.
I tend to assume everyone's like has a good heart. So it makes it that much easier for me to blame myself if something goes awry.
I'm surprisingly trusting for being known as a skeptic and stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And this is something my boyfriend yells at me about. Like, I never feel like I'm in a bad part of town.
Me neither.
I, you know, like, oh, why can't I just walk someplace? Like, it's fine, you know? And, so I generally think of myself as being indestructible, you know, completely invulnerable.
I feel like I just was saying that to someone too. I feel like of all the things I didn't shed from high school, but like, I know that I operate with a lot more fear and I do have a sense of my mortality on a profound level in a way that I absolutely did not.
Yeah.
And I think what surprises me is that you would think that I feel like certain behaviors of mine have changed, but the ones that are the easiest to change and that are the most rational, like, well, maybe just be careful in this situation, have changed not at all.
Right. Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't the ripple effect be that I then now don't walk down Market Street if I don't have to
That's a really good point.
I'm sort of defiant about it. I'm like, oh, I'm going to fucking walk down here.
Right.
Which is kind of the mentality I had then.
Yeah.
And yet somewhere inside of me, I'm like, I'm probably dying of cancer.
Right.
Like, on a deeper level than I ever was.
No, so it's
interesting. It's like my fears are still less environmental and more like illness based or freak accident based, which I don't feel like I can control that. So why? That's not going to be bad walking through a bad part of town. That's going to be like you think you're as safe as you can be because it's a freak accident.
Yes. No, I am 100% with you.
Isn't that
because
interesting?
I have always, even when I was a kid, I had a fear of random acts of violence.
Yeah.
So, I went to, even though South Jersey is a weird place. So I grew up in the woods on the creek, but my high school, a 10-minute drive away, was in like a sort of ghetto type of place. And it's a very racially segregated area where it's like where my high school is where like all of the black people live. And then the farmland is where all of the white people live, you know? And there are rough neighborhoods around my high school. And I would always have, like, when my brothers hit high school, they were 3 and 6 years older than me. I remember, like, laying in bed wondering, like, what if they're in a gang and, like, some gang comes by and does, like, a drive-by? First of all, you can't do a drive-by when you live in the woods at the end of, like, a mile-long dirt road, okay? That's not how drive-bys work, tiny Rebecca. Uh-huh. But I would still have that kind of fear of just like, oh, completely random, seemingly random thing that I have no control over, you know. But yeah, at the same time, when I went to college, like my parents dropped me off in Boston and, you know, my mom cried her eyes out because she thought they were abandoning me. And I was just like, okay, bye.
Yeah.
And then I immediately like run out and I just walked the city for like 2 days. Just with no fear at all. So yeah, I get that. It's like at the same time, you know, there are things that I can control that I don't bother to worry about. But then there are all these uncontrollable things like, what if I have cancer right now?
Yeah.
And I don't know it.
Yeah.
You know, and at the same time, I have like the sort of, those greater psychological fear of, you know, being alone in the universe. And it's like, I'm going to die one day and there's nothing I can do about it and it's going to last forever.
You know what feels better is God and believing in heaven.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. I totally get it. Mm-hmm. And in my darker moments, I have had those thoughts where I'm like, well, maybe there's an afterlife.
Right.
Maybe.
I mean, I think, and I need to get into this MASH game with you, which you may or may not have any idea what I'm about to do. But I do think that the sort of like rhetoric that I keep coming back to on this podcast is that somehow I still want to have magical thinking. But I think that's why someone like Carl Sagan appeals so much to so many people, is that he was so science-based, but there's still this sense of wonder and poetry and magical thinking to his perspectives. And I think we're hungry for that. You know, we're hungry for the person that, and Neil deGrasse Tyson's great, but he's a little bit less that and a little bit more grounded and like, come on, everybody, wake up. Yeah. You know what I mean? Opposed to this sort of gentle. Yeah. And that's what I was thinking when you said that there's the exchange of those two books. I was like, well, what better person
Sagan
than
to give
thanks to Sagan, because he's a total like gateway to science.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But that he falls in line more with like, you know, the great sci-fi writers like Arthur C. Clarke and Ray Bradbury, where there's this like tremendous magical hope to science that I think for me is the only option to replacing theology.
Yeah.
It's
no,
like
I agree.
Its own theology in a sense.
Yeah, so. you need to realize that people gravitate to religion for a reason. And, you know, one of those reasons is community and tradition and family. But yeah, a big part of it is safety and security. And another big part of it is wonder. And you know, being humbled and knowing that you don't know everything and that there's something greater than you out there. And we can replace all of those things with other, in my opinion, better things.
Yeah. Have you read that book by the, I feel like I downloaded to a device and now I can't even remember what it was, but it was based on, I got it based on his TED talk, and it was this idea, I think it was called Religion for Atheists, maybe. His TED talk was great. It was on the TED Radio Hour podcast, and he talks about exactly what you just said. It's like, I believe that if you are going to be an atheist, you need to look to religion for these tenets that will help you get through this world and kind of like touch the same parts of your brain that believing in God does.
I like you made a motion that the listeners can't see that's very affectionate,
like
and
a
like
petting
stroking.
Like a comforting petting.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'll look that up and hopefully I'll remember to talk about it and say who the person is. But okay, so this MASH game, you maybe played MASH when you were younger.
Yeah.
So mansion, apartment, shack, house, can't control that. Mm-hmm. First category for you will be three non-Earth places, could be totally from fiction or just, you know, other planets or whatever. Three vacation home spots.
Oh gosh. Okay. Let me think. So, number one, Hobbiton.
Great. Yeah, you sent me a picture of...
Yeah, I went there.
And I also have been there.
It's magical,
and,
right?
It really is, except for I just want there to be real hobbit holes in there.
I
want to
go in, I want to see a tiny house.
They warned me. Yep. I never should have looked
in
the door.
They say, don't look if you want to keep that sense of wonder.
I know.
I look too.
How dare we?
I know.
That's
skeptics.
That's it, right? There we go.
Yeah, we need to
wanting it more than... Wanting the magic more than someone who believes in the magic.
Right.
And then still looking behind the door.
Still wanting that knowledge.
Damn it.
What is wrong with us?
I don't know. Hobbiton, great. Ugh. Real Hobbiton, where there's like bread baking in the oven inside.
Yeah.
Copy that.
The tavern was good, though, too.
Yeah, that was great. Beers. That was really good.
Okay, Hobbiton.
The tavern is like the comforting pet at the end. That's like, here's one place you can go into.
Yes.
Have a drink.
Did you meet the cat?
I don't think
there's
so.
There's a cat in there, and it's adorable and really friendly and just like laying in front of the fire. It's like exactly what you want.
I can't remember if there was a cat or not, so there must not have been.
Okay, hold on. Thinking.
I know it's a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure. And I feel like I've not been funny on this show, and I feel bad for that.
That's not my goal. That's not my goal.
All right. I feel bad.
I think that natural humor comes from real discussion.
Yeah. Okay. Non-Earth. Trying to think of books I've read lately that I might be able to draw from.
Yeah. I mean, it could also be like, you know, you can breathe underwater or like...
Well, yeah, actually, that's...
You know what I mean?
That's what I was leaning towards. I was actually going to say like the Little Mermaid world.
Sure. Great. Ariel.
Yeah.
Ariel Land.
Yeah.
By the way, Tokyo Disney Sea has an underground realm that you probably would love. It's amazing, and it is, it's like you go underground, and I grant you, you know, you can see the ceiling, but they do a really nice job with like the darkness of it where you can, and you can explore her sort of world, and there's some really great touches in there.
That
highly
sounds,
recommend
so
it.
So Tokyo, I got to go to Tokyo,
Tokyo
for
Disney
this?
Sea. Right. So it's not the, it's not Disneyland. It's their California Adventure.
Right.
So it's adjacent to, and it's Tokyo Disney Sea. And
all right.
It's pretty great.
Yeah. I'm there.
Pretty great. Okay. So Ariel Land. Got it. Got it.
Mm-hmm. And then I would go with, there was a recently discovered Earth-like planet, and I can't think of the name of it, though. So
I can't either, but Earth-like planet.
I would love to go there and to see what's there. And that's one of my regrets, that I'm going to die probably before we get a chance to explore something like that. Yeah. But maybe I won't. Maybe I'll be a head in a jar.
You never know. Maybe your consciousness will be downloaded into a computer and such that you can still experience it and feel like you're seeing and tasting and feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next one will be three musicians. Could be a band, could be a solo artist that basically compose the soundtrack to your life. I mean, I guess it's not every moment like when you're grocery shopping, but like in those profound moments where you have felt like this is what I'm feeling is important right now.
Mm-hmm.
Three musicians that have kind of accompanied that with this, these special compositions for you.
Okay. I guess I have to say REM.
I mean,
yeah. First and foremost.
You owe them at least that.
Yeah. I would say the Magnetic Fields.
Great.
Every breakup I've ever had has been soundtracked by the Magnetic Fields.
Yeah, they're really good for that.
Yeah, and I'm currently really into Frightened Rabbit.
Me too.
I really like Frightened Rabbit. I saw them so live.
Great. Oh my God, what a great live show.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you listened to Al John? Have you listened to his?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's great.
Love it.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really has something special. Yeah. Boy.
Have you heard they did an AV Club cover? Because you know the AV Club does those cover things. They did Neutral Milk Hotel.
Oh, I better write that down.
Maybe Neutral Milk Hotel would replace Frightened Rabbit. Actually, am I allowed to do that?
Yes. Yes, you are.
I'm sorry, Frightened Rabbit, but Neutral Milk Hotel is...
Cross out.
Because I had this long relationship with Neutral Milk Hotel where I accepted early on that I was supposed to like them, but I didn't.
Yep,
I just
that
couldn't.
Makes sense.
I couldn't stand it. But I knew that if I kept listening one day, I would get it.
Yeah.
So like once a year or so, I would throw on In the Aeroplane Over the Sea.
Yeah.
And like maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I was like, this is the best album I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden I just got it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
They really gotcha.
Yeah.
Oh wait, hold on just a sec. Okay. Yes, that was me receiving the saddest I almost said group of flowers because it doesn't even look like an arrangement. It's just like a clump of this.
It does just look like a clump, but
what an ungrateful person.
They're pretty though.
You know what? I know exactly what I'm gonna do, which is separate them all because they don't really go together.
They
and
don't.
Just put them in separate little vases and it all will be well. And I'm a terrible human being for being that judgmental of those flowers.
No, you
I love these choices. They all are very evocative and I can very much see them being great like soundtrack personal soundtrack bands. Three foods that you can have without any consequences, any negative consequences whatsoever. Three.
So like celery.
Oh my God, I'd punch you in the face.
Three foods. Pizza.
Great.
Paneer tikka masala.
Ooh, a good tikka, get
and
with it.
Pad Khi Mal.
Which one's
it's the drunken noodles, like spicy basil sort of deal. Yeah.
I wonder if I came even close to spelling right.
They spell it, well, it's Thai, so it's anglicized anyway, and so it's spelled differently on every menu.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I'm all right. I love tom kha with rice, like pile the rice into that coconut milk and make like a rice stew.
Good.
Forget about
so
it.
So good.
So delicious.
Yeah.
Okay. Next one will be three, gentlemen, preferably people have heard of that you have in an alternate universe, either or just a romantic tryst with. Could be someone you're like, I don't think I'd want to have a conversation with this person, or could be like alternate universe relationship.
Okay. Number one, H. John Benjamin.
I mean, he's great. What can I say? I think he's terrific. He's a terrific guy. Great voice. Very funny.
Number two, Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah. I see him sometimes down here.
Yeah.
I saw him at the, I don't remember if I've said this before, but I saw him at the Sunset Nursery getting plants. And guys, for my stalkers, I don't go there anymore. So sorry. But he was with his child and I was like, I'm in a movie right now. Like I'm in a movie set in Silver Lake where he's an adorable dad buying plants with his child.
Did your ovaries explode?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. My boyfriend interviewed him for, my boyfriend does a podcast called Inquiring Minds for Mother Jones. So he interviewed Mark Ruffalo, and Mark Ruffalo was at his mother's house at Christmas or Thanksgiving. And like his mom was in the background. He's like, I'm almost done, mom. No, it's fine. Yeah. I can talk for another hour.
Yeah.
Like he was just the nicest person. And his mom was nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, no, he's great. He's great. Gotta put him on the list. Perfect.
And then I'm going to throw in Robert Downey Jr. just so I can have that like Iron Man Hawk thing that I, Iron Man Hawk Coach McGurk foursome.
Yeah. Perfect. It's all getting covered.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay. So next category will be three skills you wake up with tomorrow, Matrix style. You've downloaded them. They're in there. You're amazing at them.
Number one, surfing. I'm taking lessons.
Ooh,
I bought a surfboard. I'm really into it.
Yeah.
Number two, piano. Great. Never taken a lesson, but I'd love to just bust out like a Great Balls of Fire at a party or something. Let's see. What will be my third skill? Oh, this is tough. I would say maybe, language. The ability to.
Multilingual.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. Cause I'm useless at it unless I'm like right there in the country speaking at the time.
Sure. But even that is better than some can say.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go with three. I wish I could remember. Someone sent me a really good suggestion recently that I have, of course, forgotten. I'm going to go with three mentor type women. Like, not somebody that you is like, frosty to the point where you're like, I can't have a conversation about my period or whatever. But yeah, that's the most gross female thing I've ever said. Like, listen, that's the only thing that makes us women. It's the only thing two women can talk about that's not a man.
Gushing
we're either
blood.
Talking about a man or we're talking about
how's
our periods,
your blood?
Everyone. I hate myself.
Periods.
Okay. But three, like my example, I always say, well, I wanted her to be my best friend, but Emma Thompson. But, it could be someone like that. But could be anyone from history, too, living or dead.
Ooh.
Could even be someone from fiction. Like, oh, I wish this fictional character or a real person that I could call and be like, what do I do about this?
Right. Oh, God. Okay. Margaret Atwood. Why aren't we best friends yet? I don't know.
I don't know, but the only thing I worry about with her is that I would call her and she'd be like, well, life is essentially meaningless.
Right.
So have sex while you can.
Sometimes I need to hear
it's
that.
It's going to end up feeling very empty inside. You'll be very empty, but that's what I can offer you.
Yeah. Yeah. Good luck with
that.
I know,
but she's amazing.
Luck doesn't exist.
Yeah. Perfect. Oh, God. Yeah.
Can I have Emma Thompson too?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I love Emma Thompson.
God, she's just the best.
And... her name is escaping me.
I know, I get aphasia. This is game is guaranteed aphasia. It's like a test in aphasia.
She's a beautiful older woman.
Vanessa Redgrave.
No.
This is fun for me.
She's yeah.
American?
Sounds like. No, she's British.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's because American women have to be put out to pasture and you never see them. Judi Dench.
Judi Dench is the name that popped into my head first, but that's not who I want. She was in that
to the bottom of this.
Red movie where she was like a secret agent.
Helen Mirren.
Helen Mirren.
Great one.
Thank you. Helen
Great
Mirren.
Great one. Mm-hmm. Oh, fantastic. Okay. Next one, we're getting, we're quickly making good work of this game, except for what I just said, the really added like 10 extra minutes to me just being
it's
like,
great.
We're doing really
we're
well.
Doing things. Things are happening.
Oh, God.
Periods.
Okay. Three, you own three businesses that are very easy to run. They're just, but it's like, a sort of a side project. Three things that you offer up to people. Could be a shop, could be a service of some kind. Three.
Number one, cat shelter.
Great.
Number two, bookstore.
Great.
Number three, bar. Because my dream is to have all of those so three easy. Things in one.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great, great, great. And then final category will be three. What do I want my final category to be for you? Three. You know what? I'm curious what your answer will be. Three places and times in history that you can visit in a protected bubble. So it's if you want to see something horrifying, you won't be a part of it. But if you if you have a morbid sense of I need to see this happen, that or, you know, positive stuff.
Okay.
Places and times that you could you wish you could peep in on.
Number one, far in the future.
Yep. Great.
Yeah. Anywhere. 1,000 years, maybe.
Great.
Number two, dinosaurs. Got to see a dinosaur. Maybe ride one in my bubble.
Great.
Number three. Sorry.
No, no, it's okay. I was just sitting here pondering whether I could remember when the next Jurassic Park movie comes out.
Oh, I think it's at the end of the year, isn't it?
Probably.
Yeah. We're a long way out, but I can't wait. Gosh. Oh, I would go check out the Library of Alexandria.
Oh, that's a great one.
I would meet Hypatia.
That's a great one. Okay. All right. So I'm just going to do this real quick. You tell me when to stop. I'll do some math. We'll end this puppy. Tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. Pausing this, doing some calculations, coming back with your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Can't wait.
It's very handy when it's a manageable number. I did like the longest one in history recently, and it felt like it took me 15 minutes just to get
that
to
was
the
very
of this
fast.
Mash. Yeah, this was good. This was a quick five. Okay, a lot of this works and makes sense to me. There's like some through lines that I feel like I'm starting to sense, but maybe I'm crazy.
Okay.
Number one, I want to congratulate you on your shack. I apologize, it's in Ariel Land.
Oh, great.
Which is like, I mean, how like you're not going to have an apartment down there.
Yeah.
I don't know about this house or mansion idea. It kind of feels like it's whatever it's constructed of. It's probably some kind of a delightful cave.
Right. It's probably made of seashells.
Right.
And I am a tiny home enthusiast.
Me too.
I feel like I could do a lot with a little shell
it
shack.
It feels right to me. And I want to just get this right out of the way because I'm very envious, but also very pleased.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like Emma Thompson could chill in that world comfortably.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
On land, cat shelter. Good work.
Nice.
That feels like it totally fits also.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that.
Also exciting to me is your ability to speak multi-languages, which I can only imagine includes cat and some sort of weird mermaid language.
Mm-hmm.
Probably consisting
lobster.
Right.
Yeah, I'll also be able to sing, which will be great.
That's going to be great.
It's great.
I'm very excited that you were able to take a trip into the future.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very excited about that.
Good.
And there's something... There's something really great about this triumvirate that I'm going to leave with.
Okay.
Leave you with, which is that you can have all the pizza you want.
Sweet.
With John Benjamin.
Yes.
To the music of the Magnetic Fields.
Yes.
And follow me on this because his voice is not unlike the lead singer of the Magnetic Fields, right?
He is totally
sort of
Stephen Merritt.
Like slightly lazy bass.
Yeah.
Like sleepy, lazy bass.
I learned to play the guitar based primarily on the songs of 69 Love Songs.
Listen.
So we're going to have a great time.
You're going to have a great time. That is a good snoozy afternoon with those three right there. So great stuff. What a great time
this
talking.
This was a lot
I'm
of fun.
I'm so glad that you're able to do it while you're in town.
Yeah, me too.
And,
thank you so much, Jen.
And is there anything that you would like to tell these guys who may not be as familiar with where they can find you to go?
You can find me on Twitter at Rebecca Watson.
Great.
Or I have a website called Skepchick, skepchick.org. That's it.
Those are great. Those are great resources. Guys, we'll talk to you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.